U.S. intelligence has already moved out of the atmosphere of total secrecy which previously characterized it. We who are in intelligence are well aware of the need to retain public confidence and congressional support if we are to continue to make our contribution to the safety of our country. Thus, from the earliest days of the current investigations, I have stressed my hope that they will develop better guidelines for our operations and stronger oversight to ensure that our activities do remain within the Constitution and laws of our country. But I have not swung all the way to the other extreme of the pendulum, to the position that there can be no secrecy. General Washington once said, "Upon secrecy, success depends in most enterprises of intelligence." We have many secrets in America which are necessary to the functioning of our democracy: the ballot box, the grand jury, and our attorney-client relationships. The secrecy of our sources of intelligence is equally important to the preservation of our democracy and even of our nation in the turbulent world in which we live. In 1947, we took a small step away from total secrecy by enacting general statutes and constructing careful but limited oversight arrangements in the Congress. Proposals now under consideration would alter these arrangements to assure more detailed oversight. But it is essential that the pendulum not swing so far as to destroy the necessary secrecy of intelligence or destroy intelligence itself in the process. In former comments on this subject, I many times said that it was up to Congress to organize itself to exercise the necessary oversight of our intelligence activities. This is still true, but I believe that recent experience permits me to draw some conclusions on this topic, which this committee has graciously invited. The matter has been extensively studied within the administration during the past year, as President Ford shares many of the concerns of the Congress on this subject. The Rockefeller Commission, the Murphy Commission, our discussions with the Select Committees, and other committees reflect this interest. A number of detailed studies were also made within the executive branch, reaching the level of two extended meetings President Ford had with the National Security Council members. The views of the administration are not yet formally fixed, so the comments I will make will be personal and based on my experience. My participation in the studies the above, however, assures me that my views are in general compatible with the thrust of what President Ford will probably decide, although there may be some variation in the details. Too great a stress on secrecy has led to situations in which members of Congress who were fully briefed on intelligence activities pleaded later that they had never heard of them when they came to public attention. One of the chairmen of our committees once indicated on the floor of the Senate that he had no inkling of one of our operations, although he had approved the specific appropriations necessary to continue it. His statement certainly kept the secrecy of his participation in our operation, but at the sacrifice of implying that our intelligence activities were operating without oversight and control. Indeed, he added to public concern that we constituted some independent, invisible government. On a number of occasions, especially since 1956, proposals have been made to establish a joint committee on intelligence, but the Congress has never seen fit to adopt them. During this past year, jurisdictional problems have been highlighted in the Congress as a result of two things. First, foreign intelligence today is not primarily limited to military intelligence, as it may have been in earlier years. It also is now of interest to those committees concerned with our economy, our foreign relations, our agriculture, space, and a wide variety of other activities. As a result, we have had a proliferation of demands for congressional review of sensitive foreign intelligence matters in these fields by other committees, to the degree that 59 senators and 149 representatives have been briefed on some aspect of our activities this past year alone. Second, during 1974, there was much congressional interest in our covert action activities, sparked by exposure of testimony I gave to one of our oversight committees on the subject. Both the House and the Senate by 3-1 majorities, turned down proposals that CIA be barred from such activities. But in December 1974, a provision was added to the Foreign Assistance Act, which required that any CIA activity abroad, other than intelligence gathering, could only be conducted if it were found by the President to be important to the national security and reported in a timely fashion to the appropriate committees of the Congress. Together with the two select committees, these appropriate committees now number 8. I might quote, Mr. Chairman, from the conference report which led to the adoption of that new act. And it says that the committee of conference agreed that strict measures should be taken to ensure maximum security of the information submitted to the Congress pursuant to this provision. The executive branch is fully complying with the provisions of that law. The President made the appropriate findings, and briefings were given to the committees according to whatever arrangements the committees made. It was stressed and understood on all sides that these matters were sensitive, secret operations whose exposure would cause political damage to our foreign policy as well as frustration to the operations concerned. Clear. The system won't work. Every one of the new projects that were subjected to this process has leaked into the public domain. I am prepared to argue the value of each of these projects, but that is not my current point. The fact is that a secret operation conducted precisely according to the procedures set by the Congress cannot be kept secret. I believe it essential to repeal that procedure and replace it by another, which will include provisions for adequate secrecy. In this bicentennial year, it is appropriate to note an earlier American experience with this problem. On November 9, 1775, the Continental Congress adopted a resolution of secrecy, under which any member who disclosed a matter which the majority had determined should be kept secret was to be expelled, and I quote, and deemed an enemy to the liberties of America, unquote. On November 29, 1775, the Congress established the Committee on Secret Correspondence and gave it foreign intelligence responsibilities, managing a network of secret agents in Europe. This committee took steps to protect the secrecy of its intelligence activities by sharply restricting access to operational matters. On one occasion, the committee justified the secrecy of its information as follows. Quote, considering the nature and importance of it, we agree that it is our indispensable duty to keep it secret, even from Congress. We find, by fatal experience, that Congress consists of too many members to keep secrets, unquote. Mr. Chairman, at that time, there were 56 representatives in the Congress, compared to the 208 that I reported briefing during 1974. If the Congress should decide to adopt new oversight arrangements, I believe it should establish a representative group to oversee intelligence activities on Congress' behalf. This representative group could be a joint committee or other arrangement. In any event, a representative group should consist of a restricted number of members so that we do not involve the large numbers of congressmen and senators currently briefed on our sensitive activities. The representative character of such an oversight body must be respected by us in the intelligence community so that we make available the information it needs to do its job. At the same time, arrangements can and should be developed between such a representative body and the intelligence community by which reasonable limits are established as to the matters made available even to it. In my present post as Director of Central Intelligence, I do not insist, for example, upon knowing the name of a foreign agent in some dangerous situation. It is not necessary to my duties that I know his specific identity. It is essential that we be able to assure our foreign agents abroad, a number of whom have already expressed their alarm and limited what they tell us, that their names will be totally protected, since their lives or livelihoods are at peril. I would expect that a responsible representative committee of the Congress would similarly not request such specific identification, as our current oversight and select committees have not requested such sensitive information. Understandings of this nature between a responsible oversight body and the intelligence community would be more productive than adversary debates over either branch's right to have or to withhold such information. A responsible oversight body must not discourage the intelligence community from conducting its own investigations and correcting its activities. A great portion of this past year's investigations has consisted only of public repetition of the private reviews by the intelligence community of its own activities. Since the full story of American intelligence remains secret, the impression is left with our public that what was revealed is characteristic of the whole. The experience has done little to encourage objective and hard-hitting self-examination in the future. CIA's collation of a list of some questionable activities in the domestic field was used as the basis for sensational charges of a massive illegal domestic intelligence operation. In truth, our misdeeds were few and far between, as the final Rockefeller Commission report reveals. CIA's investigation into possible assassination activity, which led to specific directives in 1972 and 1973 against such activity, have been made the basis for sweeping allegations that assassinations are part of our function. We never assassinated anyone, as the Senate report on the subject reveals. And our own postmortems on our performance in various intelligence situations have been selectively exposed to give a totally erroneous impression of continued failures of American intelligence. In fact, we have the best intelligence service in the world. But we cannot keep it that way if every one of its corrective efforts is trumpeted to its enemies. In the consideration of any altered oversight arrangements, the Congress should, I believe, deal with the problem of proliferation of congressional review of intelligence activities. I strongly urge that oversight be concentrated exclusively in the minimum number of committees necessary to effectively conduct it, which to me means one. Otherwise, we are in danger of reverting to the situation of reporting to a myriad of committees and exposing parts of our activities in all directions. It should be possible to concentrate congressional oversight, perhaps arranging that the oversight committees have representation from the other standing committees with an interest in the subject. The issue of giving prior notice to Congress of sensitive intelligence operations has been raised, Mr. Chairman. I believe this is a thoroughly false issue. The present statute calls for the appropriate committees to be informed in a timely fashion with respect to activities abroad other than intelligence gathering. Our regular oversight committees are kept currently informed of major developments, and each year they review our appropriation requests in great detail. A requirement of prior notice before any intelligence activity could be undertaken would, in my view, conflict with the President's constitutional rights, would be totally impractical during times of congressional recess when crises can arise, and would add nothing to the ability of the Congress to express its views about any of our activities. We currently inform the Congress on any decision immediately, although the actual hearing may be delayed by the committee in question for several weeks. Almost none of our activities are single-step operations, which take place on only one occasion. An intelligence or covert action operation is generally a continuing effort running over some time. Informed of such an activity, a committee has every ability to express the concern of its individual members, to vote in committee its opinion with respect to the activity, to appeal to the congressional leadership, or even to seek an appointment with the President himself. The committee also retains the ultimate legislative or appropriation sanction if its views are not given due weight. The unilateral exposure of an operation to public notice is not the solution. In essence, the theory adopted by some is that the right to expose such operations constitutes a superconstitutional individual veto of any secret activity. The chairman of the House Select Committee has expressed his concern over the leakage which has occurred of this nature. We cannot run such secret operations, Mr. Chairman, if congressmen confirm to inquiring newsmen operating on a lead that indeed they were given a secret briefing on a covert operation in a certain country, instead of refusing to comment. Neither can we run secret operations if individual congressmen announce that there are three other operations which have not yet been disclosed, thereby stimulating every investigative reporter in Washington to determine the specifics thereof by some hypothetical questions. And we cannot conduct covert operations if a committee puts out a report which refers to an activity which leaves out the name of a country or individual concern, but gives enough evidence for any amateur sleuth to identify it beyond a shadow of a doubt in times for its identification to be carried with the news stories of the report itself. An essential element of new congressional oversight arrangements is better procedures for protecting sensitive information. Senate Rule 36, 2, and 3 states that confidential communications from the president or head of any department are to be kept secret unless the Senate votes. But the Senate, on November 20th of last year, failed to vote on the release by the Select Committee of information which the president specifically requested be kept secret, and in the face of my request that certain names of CIA personnel therein be deleted. In the House of Representatives, Rule 11-2E2 provides that the records of any committee are open to any member which on at least one occasion has led to the exposure of certain CIA operations despite the written promise of a member to keep them secret. The arrangements for Congress to receive and protect sensitive information are most imperfect. A prior security clearance of staff members and termination of employment for disclosure are hardly adequate sanctions to ensure the protection of sensitive intelligence sources, which can produce substantial royalties for its disclosure. The extensive briefings and indoctrination and the secrecy agreements employed in the executive branch have even proved inadequate in the state of our present legislation. With respect to staff members, therefore, I believe it essential that a regular procedure of security protection be established. This must be enforceable not only by indoctrination and discipline, but also by sanctions. These are contained in legislation which I have proposed and which is about to be recommended by the executive branch to cover those who voluntarily undertake the obligation of secrecy as an aspect of their employment involving access to intelligence. This proposal would apply equally to executive branch employees and congressional staff members. Should apply equally to executive branch employees and the congressional staff members who obtain privileged access to our intelligence secrets. With respect to members of the Congress themselves, we must, of course, look to the self-discipline of the two houses with respect to their membership. Mr. Chairman, we also need a procedure to determine the declassification and public release of those secrets that no longer need be protected. This cannot be left to the individual staff member in the executive or to the individual in the legislative branch. Under the Constitution, it cannot be assumed by the legislative branch alone, and any such contention would inevitably restrict the flow of sensitive information from the executive. This could consist of an agreement that if the committee decides on release, the president has reasonable opportunity to certify that the release would be detrimental to the national security, and his determination then would govern in the absence of further resolution of the constitutional questions involved. And this must apply to any release of the information, not just the documents, so as not to lead to an absurd situation in which a committee agrees not to release individual reports of secret activities, but then proposes to publish them in its final report. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I believe that congressional oversight of our intelligence activities can be strengthened. The degree of oversight can be increased relative to that in the years in which there was a general consensus that these matters were better not known by outsiders. The structure can be improved by focusing responsibility so that a depth of knowledge and expertise about our intelligence operations can be developed. The structure can also be improved by clear assignment of responsibility for exclusive supervision of our intelligence activities to a limited number of members of the Congress, representing the Congress as a whole. Those members would have full access to all information appropriate to exercise their responsibilities. And the congressional oversight can be improved by making arrangements with Congress to protect the sensitive intelligence activities of our government in the same way that we protect other secrets essential to the survival of American democracy. Executive branch supervision can also be improved by ensuring the discipline of those in the intelligence profession and of their supervisors as to their respect for these important national secrets, and by giving us the ability to enforce such protection against those who would wantonly destroy them. These improvements, Mr. Chairman, in supervision of our intelligence activities would have truly more long-lasting value as a result of this year of investigation than any other single action taken by the Congress. They would be a fitting conclusion to this year of investigation of intelligence, so that our intelligence service will be responsible to our Constitution, its legislative oversight will be equally responsible, and we will continue to have the best intelligence in the world. It will give, Mr. Chairman, a new meaning to the initials CIA, Constitutional Intelligence for America, with equal stress on the needs of all three, the Constitution, intelligence, and especially America. Thank you
very much, Mr. Colby. But Mr. Colby, you are for the establishment of an oversight committee on intelligence.
A committee with exclusive jurisdiction for the oversight of foreign intelligence, Mr. Chairman.
Now, Senator Mansfield, in his testimony, believes that that committee should be established in this session of Congress. Senator Weicker states that if this session of Congress does not establish such a committee, it won't be established. Senator Towers says that we should not establish it in this session of Congress, but put it over to the next session of Congress. Do you agree that Congress should establish that oversight committee in this session of Congress?
I think the sooner the better, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Now, on page 6, you state that the CIA has never assassinated anyone. Would you support a prohibition against the assassination of anyone in the absence of war?
Well, I have issued directives to that effect within CIA, Mr. Chairman, and I would have no reservation against such a prohibition.
What do you think, Mr. Colby, that a congressional committee should do if it opposes a decision to conduct a covert operation and Congress has only a few days in which to act before an operation goes into effect? What do you think Congress...
I believe that the committee might vote. The committee might wait upon the president and express its views to him specifically. The committee can obviously indicate that it has an ultimate authority to pass new legislation in the future, or to affect the appropriations in the future of the agency involved in such activity. And I think the normal workings of the constitutional tension between the two branches will bring about some resolution, perhaps not of that particular action, if the president felt it terribly important, but would develop a relationship between the executive branch and the legislative, which would give full consideration to the views of the legislative as well as the executive side.